That many, really?
I'll call this meeting in order of the House Committee on Veterans and Services Emergency Preparedness for Thursday, February 5th, 2015. I'm not aware, members, that we have any committee bills yet, but we'll keep that on the agenda, so if they do come up, we'll be able to deal with those when they come forward. If you're aware of, if you have bills, again, let us know that you want the committee to introduce. We will do that. So at this time, I will open the public hearing. First item on our public hearing is House Bill 2036, and Representative Huffman, I think you're going to introduce this for us.
Are you ready, Chair?
You betcha.
Thank you, Chair Lively. And welcome to everybody. This is an exciting day for me, kind of a culmination of a lot of work with Dick Tobiasen and others over the years. And where we came up with this bill, I got to tell you a funny story, because if you don't know Colonel Tobiasen well, this will give you kind of an idea. And we had joined together the most recent official highway dedication, not counting Warm Springs, which is still in the works, but I-84, which is the Vietnam Veteran Memorial Highway. We dedicated that on Memorial Day in the Dalles at the Veterans Home. And Dick was up talking, and he has a way of passing along information to you at these opportune times. And so I'm sitting back there, and he's saying, and so next session, Representative Huffman, I'm going to be talking to him about doing another highway for this. So after the meeting, I went and I said, Dick, how many more highways are there? Is this going to be one per session or what? Yeah. I said, no. So we had some friends from Oregon Department of Transportation there, and Cameron was there, Cameron Smith, in the room. I got him together with Dick, and I said, can we all agree to do one comprehensive bill on the remaining highways and the remaining honoring of the veterans groups? And so I think before we left the room that day, we had a simple agreement, and so House Bill 2036 came out of Memorial Day 2014, and so it's a comprehensive bill that, and I'm not going to get into the details because we're going to hear testimony on Highway 395 and 101 and the Purple Heart Trail, and all of that will have good testimony. But I would like to ask particularly Rob and Joel, as you get up to testify, to kind of give us your personal perspective, as everybody else, to make sure that, you know, we're all on the same page, that everybody's in agreement that Purple Heart Trail should be a designation, Gulf War, Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, for Highway 101, et cetera, and so on, that we're doing the right thing. And so just share that with the committee, and we appreciate everybody coming.
Okay, thank you. Anybody have any questions for Rip? Sure.
I have a lot of 101 in my district, so it's the whole from the entire one?
Border to border.
Cool.
Okay. Anything else before we call up our first witnesses? Okay, so we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 listed here. And so, right, you two can come forward first, Mr. Tobiasen and Robert Walker. For the record, if you just introduce yourself.
Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Well, thank you, Representative Huffman, for that introduction. Chairman Lively and distinguished members of this committee, I am Dick Tobiasen, and I'm chairman of the Bend Heroes Foundation, a nonprofit 501c3 organization in Bend honoring veterans. I am a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel and a two-tour Vietnam veteran. I'm a member of the American Legion, Military Officers Association of America, Military Order of the Purple Heart, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and Vietnam Veterans of America. Bend Heroes Foundation's contact information is 1900 Northeast 3rd Street, Suite 106, number 205, Bend, Oregon 97701, 541-388-5591. I'm accompanied today by Robert Lee Walker III, an Army veteran who served in Kosovo and Iraq as a Specialist Fourth Class. Mr. Walker is a director of our foundation and our webmaster. I invited Joel Dosanti to join us today, as he is an Army veteran who served in Afghanistan with the 82nd Airborne Division. Sergeant Dosanti was wounded severely during combat. He lives in Portland and is a member of the Military Order of the Purple Heart. Joining us later is Keegan Hodges, a Navy Gulf War veteran and second vice commander, American Legion Department of Oregon, and Dennis Guthrie, an Army veteran, Vietnam veteran, and chairman of the Oregon Department of Veterans of Foreign Wars Legislation Committee. It is an honor, indeed a huge honor, for us to testify to you in support of HB 2036. Beginning in 2008, Bend Heroes Foundation requested legislation designating two border-to-border highways in Oregon honoring World War II and Vietnam War veterans on U.S. Highway 97, World War II veterans, and Interstate 84 Vietnam veterans, as Representative Huffman just mentioned. The foundation raised the funds and managed the installation of 18 World War II veterans' historic highway signs in U.S. 97, and you'll see a picture in a minute. The foundation and Oregon State Council Vietnam Veterans Affairs raised the funds and installed 16 more signs on Interstate 84 honoring Vietnam veterans. Many county commissions along highways.
Can I interrupt? Sorry about that, Mr. Chair.
Go ahead.
I want to point out on the – that's a very key point that Mr. Tobiasen just pointed out, that the veterans groups raise all of the money. And we were just talking before coming into the hearing, there is a referral to Ways and Means, and I'm going to work to get that lifted because there is no cost to the state on this. It's all self-funded.
Yes. Thank you, sir. So many county commissioners along those highways donated on behalf of their citizens honoring these war veterans. Our philosophy is our society honors veterans. Veterans should not, in fact, be honoring themselves. So we're delighted that most of the money that we do get comes from the community at large. On both highway projects, we enjoyed an outstanding relationship with the Oregon Department of Transportation, Region 4, designing and installing the signs. And thank you, Representative Huffman, for brokering that with Bob Bryant. We paid ODOT to install the signs when we could not have volunteer drillers and riggers to do the work. We paid ODOT for all the signs on Interstate 84 and only two of the 18 signs on World War II. So World War II and Vietnam veterans sincerely appreciate their new highway signs. We hope to see that happen again on Interstate 5 and U.S. 101 soon. When Ron Morgan testifies, you might ask him. I have a great picture of his group and us installing that sign in the Dells. And I know watching the veterans help install the signs, I saw a few tears. Representative Huffman, we want to thank Representative John Huffman for his leadership with the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway legislation and HB 2036. Representative Huffman was the keynote speaker for the dedication of the 377-mile Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway on Memorial Day last year, as you just mentioned. Bend Heroes Foundation requested HB 2036 and enthusiastically supports it now before this committee. If enacted into law, HB 2036 will accomplish our vision of honoring all Oregon veterans who served during five major wars around the globe. From World War I to the present, that's 98 years that Oregon veterans have served in wars. That would be accomplished with prominent ODOT-approved signs installed along 1,343 miles of four new border-to-border highways in Oregon. And I'm glad you mentioned that, sir, that they are border-to-border. In fact, they'll be, in some cases, the first in the country. The four border-to-border highways total 1,343 miles. U.S. 395 for World War I veterans is 389 miles. I-5 for the Korean War is 308 miles, all of I-5 from border to border. I-5 is at Purple Heart Trail also is the same 308 miles. So two groups of veterans would be honored on the same highway. Go back to, can you get picture one? Have you shown picture one yet? Here we go. Okay, these are our World War II veterans on the last sign we installed on Highway 97 up at Biggs Junction where it intersects the Vietnam Highway Interstate 84. Those four veterans happen to be World War II veterans that our foundation took on an honor flight trip. We've made 10 trips so far honoring 405 World War II veterans from Oregon, and we're doing 50 more in May. And anybody wants to go with us, they can sign up. It's a mind life-changing event, but not only for the veterans, but the veterans, the guardians who go with them. Have you shown the second picture? Is the Vietnam veterans with their sign on Interstate 84 at LeGrand. LeGrand was interesting because we had an agreement with ODOT to put up 15 signs, and a LeGrand veteran said, we want one more. So we took one more out of storage, and we put up the 16th sign, thanks to the American Legion of VFW there. So these veterans, when they see their signs, it's a big deal. It's not only a big deal to put them up, but to stand there and say, someone is thinking about us, and we're not forgotten. Altogether, I'm sorry, and then 101, it would be the Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, Iraq wars veterans hired, and that's 338 miles. I want to say something about that because Rob is a web guru and a techie guy, and we've been looking at the internet to find out where else in the United States there are border highways for Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, Iraq veterans. There are none that we could find. They're close. Kansas has a couple hundred miles, and they're trying to get a bridge in Mississippi named for Afghanistan and Iraq. Kansas, it's OIF and OEF, and I don't think the public understands that. If you say Afghanistan and Iraq, I think that's more understandable. So altogether, with these four highways at HB2036 and the World War II and Vietnam highways, we're talking about 2,145 miles of border-to-border highways. Now, there's one corner up there in northwest Oregon where you have the 41st Sunset Division, and those signs have been there for decades and decades, and they're in a rest stop, but that's the 41st Infantry Division memorial sign. So you can see we're going from border to border, coast to coast, not coast to coast, but border to border is good. The four proposed honorary highway signs would be a highly visible means of honoring veterans. And I think when you see these signs of those first, the World War II and the Vietnam, you know that the public is going to see them. I had a letter from a woman who said, when I'm driving down US 97, I can finally tell my daughter what happened in World War II. So it's been a very meaningful experience for the public. So let's get back to the three veterans groups plus the Purple Heart veterans we're talking about. So in this bill, what we're supporting is 44,200 World War I veterans served, 2,866 casualties, and there are none living anywhere in the world. The last World War I veteran from Oregon died was Howard Byrne Ramsey in Portland. I was able to get a bench park at the reservoir where he walked every day for 60 years. I was able to get a bench dedicated in his honor. Howard Byrne Ramsey, he was the last combat veteran from the United States. Frank Buckles died a couple of years later at 110. Howard was 108. For Korean War veterans, we have 74,000 served. There's about 941 casualties and about 30,000 still living with us. Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, Iraq War veterans, my young comrades left and right here, almost 90,000 served, almost 800 casualties, and there are about 85,000 living in Oregon today. So if we add up all those three wars, World War I, Korea, Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, Iraq, we're talking about 207,000 veterans who served, about 4,600 casualties, and about 115,000 living among us today. By designating these three highways in their honor, Oregon will join many other states honoring their war veterans, those who served, those who died, those wounded, and those still living. There are many states that have World War I, World War II, Korea, Vietnam highway signs. Very few, if any, have Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, Iraq. The Purple Heart Medal, this happens to be my Purple Heart Medal from Vietnam. If you haven't seen a Purple Heart Medal, we'd like to introduce you to it, and maybe Commander Upton would do that afterwards. But it's a combat decoration and is our nation's oldest military medal. It was created by General George Washington in 1782 and was known as the Badge of Military Merit. As a matter of fact, the backside, it does say Military Merit today. The Badge of Military Merit was made of cloth and is the predecessor of the Purple Heart Medal. The Purple Heart is awarded to members of the United States Armed Forces who are wounded by the enemy and posthumously to the next of kin of those who were killed in action, KIA, or die of wounds received in action. The heritage it represents is sacred to those who understand the price paid to wear it. The purpose of the Purple Heart Trail is to create a symbolic and honorary system of roads, highways, and bridges that pay tribute to the 1.8 million men and women who have been awarded the Purple Heart Medal since 1932. The Purple Heart Trail accomplishes this honorary goal by creating a visual reminder to those who use the road system that others have paid a high price for their freedom to travel and live in a free society. If you look in the upper left corner, you'll see the Purple Heart Trail sign that Commander Upton would like to have on I-5. And that there are many designs, but that is probably the nicest one of all. And thank you, Commander Upton, for choosing that design. So designating I-5 also as a Purple Heart Trail will honor Oregon's 6,022 war dead, all wars, including World War II and Vietnam, and the estimated 15,000 combat wounded veterans. The Purple Heart Trail will also honor recipients who live in Oregon who earned their medal while residents of other states. Now, how did I get to the 15,000 wounded? There is no database that tells you how many are wounded. So what you do is you go to the national statistics like, let's take World War II, 405,000 veterans killed in World War II, 670,000 wounded. That means for everyone killed, there was 1.7 more wounded. 2.7 would be eligible for the Medal of Honor, right? So if you multiply that 1.7 times the number of killed in that war, you would get wounded. And you do that for each war, and you end up with 15,000. So there is no database, but you can estimate it based on multipliers from the national statistics. Oregon DMV has issued 2,321 Purple Heart license plates. Almost 500 Purple Heart recipients from Oregon are enrolled in the very little-known National Purple Heart Hall of Honor in New York. Locally, Purple Heart recipients are honored in six Purple Heart cities in Oregon: Albany, thank you, Charlie, Medford, Redmond, Bend, Prineville, and Lapine, with Albany and Medford located in I-5. Perfect place for a Purple Heart Trail. As a Purple Heart Trail, Oregon's I-5 would link Purple Heart Trails on I-5 in California and Washington, becoming the first continuous Purple Heart Trail between Canada and Mexico, and also probably the first across the United States in any direction. There are Purple Heart Trails in 45 states and none spanning our nation, according to the Military Order of the Purple Heart. Slide 7. So there's the Purple Heart Trail system in the United States. Apologize for the quality of the picture, but that's the best we could get from the Purple Heart website. So you can see Washington's got a Purple Heart Trail, California has, and we in Oregon are going to fill in that blank if you enact this bill. We would just love to do that. While all of Oregon's 21,000 war casualties and their counterparts from other states living in Oregon probably did not receive the Purple Heart Medal, they would be honored by the Oregon Purple Heart Trail on a heavily traveled 1,380-mile, 1-mile Interstate 5 highway between our nation's borders with Mexico. I cannot stress this too much. This is going to be a first. Isn't that neat that Oregon's going to make this a first? Please. HB 2036, like the World War II and Vietnam highways already designated by SB 449, SB 461, would require Oregon Department of Transportation to install and maintain suitable markers, signs, along each highway and allow ODOT to accept monies from and enter into agreements with veterans groups to create, install, and maintain the highway signs. ODOT would not be allowed to use public funds, just as we did for the World War II and Vietnam highways. The veterans have to go out and get the donations, however they get them, and then we pay ODOT. Some of the highways have multiple names. For instance, all of these highways we're talking about, except for 395, are also Blue Star Memorial Highways. And Blue Star Memorial Highways honor all veterans in peace and war. However, they're mostly in rest stops and not seen by the public. So Highway I-5, 97, I-84, 101 are all Blue Star Memorial Highways. If this bill passes, I would ask the Oregon Federation of Garden Clubs to establish 395 as a Blue Star Memorial Highway. I think it would be just marvelous to do that. So some of these highways do have multiple names, and those names and associated information on maps would not be changed by HB 2036. Everything stays the way it is. These are honorary designations. There are no name changes. There's no limit on how many names or honorary designations a highway can have. All of the new veterans' highways would be honorary designations, just as the World War II and Vietnam veterans' highways were designated. With HB 2036 enacted into law, all Oregon veterans who served during five major wars over the last 98 years would be honored. This would include the 479,000 who served, almost a half million that served from Oregon. The 6,022 who died, that we know their names. The 15,000 who were wounded, and a 257,000 living war veterans in Oregon. About 78% of Oregon's 331,600 living veterans served during those five wars, with about 800 still deployed in Afghanistan. I just talked to Colonel Miner last night in Afghanistan with the 1st and the 82nd. They're getting ready to move. The honorific signs will be seen by many veterans as a meaningful tribute by fellow Oregonians for their service and sacrifice during war, especially our youngest. There are almost 100 congressionally chartered veterans groups, American Legion, AMVETS, DAV, Korean War Veterans, Military Order, Purple Heart, VFW, VVA, located along US 395, I-5, and US 101. You can see the totals, 97. So if let's take US 101, 338 miles long. There are 6 American Legion posts, 13 VFW posts, 3 DAV, 2 AMVETS, no Korean, 1 Military Order, the Purple Heart, 1 VVA. 26 veterans groups there on that highway alone out of 97. I-5's got 69 veterans groups. HB 2036 enacted in law will provide those groups new opportunities to honor their veterans, raise funds for the new signs, and attract more members to their groups, especially younger veterans. Younger veterans typically do not join the American Legion of VFW and whatnot because they're young and they have other interests at heart. But as they get older, they might. But why wouldn't they be interested if a highway is going to be dedicated to them? Maybe we seniors in the American Legion of VFW and things like that can inspire them to be honored and to also join up. 12 veterans whose homes of record were along U.S. 101 made the ultimate sacrifice in Iraq and Afghanistan. They represent 11% of Oregon's war dead from those wards. It would be a grand tribute to honor them with signs near their cities and on their highway. There are between 1 and 4 veterans groups located in the 6 gold star cities located in U.S. 101. Have you got that? See the 6 gold stars. Started up there at Astoria, Warrenton, Newport, Reedsport, Gulf, North Bend, and Coos Bay. So there are 12 veterans, and I have their names, and I'd like to submit their names for the record. The stars are one thing, but names are much more important. I think this would be important for us to remember them by name and have signs installed in their cities. Congress chartered the nonprofit Korean War Veterans Association and the Military Order of the Purple Heart and all the other veterans groups to represent their specific war group, their veterans group. There is no such organization in Oregon representing our nation's oldest war veterans, World War I, they're all gone, and our youngest, Persian Gulf, Afghanistan, Iraq. That is why we should speak for them now as we did for World War II veterans on U.S. Highway 97. There are no surviving World War veterans in the world. And we should not wait decades to honor Oregon's youngest war veterans, as was the case for their predecessors. We've waited 100 years for the World War I veterans. Their war started 100 years ago. They have no highway signs. Two of these highways were selected based on war memorials honored near the highways or the proximity of similar highways in adjoining states. I-5, where we have the Oregon Korean War Veterans Memorial at Wilsonville, was created by the Korean War veterans. So it would make sense to designate I-5 in their honor because their memorial's there. And U.S. 101, American Veterans and Desert Storm Memorial, is there in Lincoln City, created by Mark S. Hemstreet, founder and owner of Shiloh Inn's Suites Hotel. Mr. Hemstreet also supports our honor flight program severely. Just a great guy. And, of course, I-5 in California and Washington, we have Purple Heart Trails. So you've seen that slide. So that's why we chose those highways to have those names. I think many of you know Mr. Robert D. Maxwell from Bend, our nation's oldest Medal of Honor recipient. Representative Escoville knows him well because you sponsored a bill with me to get the Medal of Honor license plate for him and the Gold Star plate. Thank you, sir. And Mr. Maxwell is a director of our foundation, just like Rob is, and at 94 years old is our nation's oldest Medal of Honor recipient and recipient of 2 Purple Hearts medals during World War II. Mr. Maxwell is very pleased with HB 2036, especially as it ensures our now departed World War I veterans will not be forgotten, and Oregon's youngest combat veterans are honored now while most are living among us. Mr. Maxwell is on vacation in Arizona, and he sends his best to all of you, especially the gentlemen that he has met before. Ben Harrow's Foundation wholeheartedly supports HB 2036 because the honorific signs it would allow will instill pride and appreciation in war veterans, educate the traveling public about the service and sacrifice of Oregon's war veterans over the last 98 years, and complete the 5 war veterans, war highways, and Purple Heart Trail we requested. Specialist Walker and Sergeant Dulashani might wish to comment on the significance of the proposed Purple Heart Trail on I-5 and the Persian Gulf Afghanistan-Iraq Veterans Highway on U.S. 101. Representative Huffman.
Go ahead.
We're missing it. Thank you, Madam Vice Chair. Each one of you, if you could speak, but just even though Dick had introduced you, introduce yourself for the record. And you don't need to get real close to the microphone because they're pretty powerful. They'll pick you up.
Chair, Mrs. Vice Chair, Mr. Vice Chair, and honorable members of the committee, for the record, it is my honor on behalf of proposed House Bill 2036 legislation, and it would be my pleasure to answer any questions you have afterward to the best of my ability. I can speak for myself as a former member of the U.S. military, as an Afghanistan and Global War on Terrorism veteran, as a Purple Heart recipient, and as an experienced and ranked airborne infantry U.S. Army sniper.
Excuse me, could you just give your name into the mic?
For the record,
yes.
Mrs. Chair.
Thank you.
My name is Joel Dulashanti.
Thank you.
But more importantly, as an Oregonian and an American, about what it's like to drive down a highway and know that there have been fellow citizens that have contributed so much to this great country of ours, and even more so to this amazingly beautiful state that we live in, by seeing a plaque or a marker along the edge of the road commemorating all that they have done or given. There is nothing more exciting in Oregon for me to take a road trip to Bend, Newport, Florence, Astoria, the Sisters, Mount Hood, the Gorge, and to Salem, brewery capital of the world, among many other places, for the beauty that the state has to offer. And that is the pride of Oregon. Being from the East Coast originally, there is nothing in comparison when driving through rainforests, along snow-capped volcanoes, through the gorge and its vast expanse, along the coast seeing the largest sand dunes in America, and amazing cliffs formations in the ocean jutting out from the beach that rival the most beautiful landscapes off the coast of North Vietnam and Ha Long Bay. I am proud to be an Oregonian, and more proud that my expectant daughter will be a native Oregonian. It has always driven my curiosity to know that the person that has been commemorated by signs along interstates and highways throughout the country, when I see a sign for a state patrol officer or a trooper, I automatically think that that person has given the ultimate sacrifice for something that he or she did involving his or her high-risk job in protecting its citizens. As a combat veteran whose job was to shoot combatants, I have a lot of brothers placed throughout America, some in graves, who have protected us, U.S. citizens, with the ultimate sacrifice. Those people have given that sacrifice for the preservation of our way of life, which is freedom. I never forget them, and I have never forgotten the last time that we hung out together. I've never forgotten the different things that we've done, from driving halfway across the country in 19 hours as teenagers to the late nights spent on forward observation posts. When we lost a brother in combat, we would change the name of that forward observation post, that FOB, to that of the name of the hero that was lost. There was a meeting that took place, and people contributed to the signs, but nothing had to be voted on because it was just the right thing to do. Remembrance is a difficult word, not in enunciating or defining, but in regards to living. You never know when you will lose the memory of something that has happened to you. You can take supplements that support memory and write down instances, take a picture, and these days, connect an event through social media. The right thing to do for the honorable is to remember them. It will never replace the positive contributions that these individuals could have made continuing to live in this world. But it is a step in the right direction in regards to honoring and commemorating them. To say more in, inspiring people along their drives to think about what feat that person or that organization did. What venture had to be taken to get commemorated for such a sign along our public infrastructure? In 2001, California made into state law commemorating their portion of the I-5 corridor as National Purple Heart Trail. The state's legislators' attitude at the time can be read in SCR 14, Chapter 79's text, as helping the military order of Purple Heart in establishing a national commemorative trail honoring Purple Heart recipients. Quote, whereas all states in the Union will designate highways for inclusion in the commemorative trail, and all highways being interconnected to form a national Purple Heart Trail, unquote. With California taking this legislative initiative as the first on the West Coast deciding upon their portion of the I-5 corridor to be added to the Purple Heart Trail, we can assure that it was the idea of the legislator to form an international border to border, or international border to international border, from state to state, that all of I-5 would be included. Washington has added its portion of the I-5 corridor as a National Purple Heart Trail, and we ask that this session of our state's legislature do the same and complete the first international border-to-border of the U.S. National Purple Heart Trail throughout America. In 2009, California also sought to designate and pass legislation that added portions of U.S. 101 as part of the Purple Heart Trail. We ask that this committee pass legislation in adding to U.S. 101 throughout Oregon as a commemorative highway, honoring veterans who have most recently served in conflict, protecting our freedoms and combating global terrorism. There is no better expanse of beauty and serenity in the country to do so, respectively, than along U.S. 101 in Oregon. There are a lot of things that I haven't added to my testimony, or to the testimony of Mr. Tobiasen, and I would love to contribute if you feel the need for me to do so. But to conserve time for the committee, I will render my portion of testimony back to the House. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Should we just finish the panel and then we can have questions? So go ahead, if you'd state your name for the record.
For the record, my name is Robert Lee Walker III. I'm not nearly as eloquent as Joel is, but I have two personal reasons for me why I believe HB 2036 is a great idea. The first being that I have a son coming in June, and I want to go to the coast and him to see that sign to be proud of his dad. That's a big plus for me. The second part of that is I feel like veterans that are my age and Joel's age aren't necessarily participating in the veterans communities like they should. And I think that we come from a very visual generation. And by putting up those signs, I think that will contribute to having veterans of our age participate more in that community.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Does anybody have any questions, comments? All right. Well, thank you.
Madam Chair.
Oh, sorry. I didn't see your...
I'd like to ask the Colonel, when were you in country? What years?
I'm sorry, sir?
What years were you in country?
I was in Vietnam twice. I was 66, 67 in the DMZ. I was a Army pilot in command of 10 airplanes supporting the 3rd Marine Division. I was wounded in medevac, hand grenade at night. My second tour in 72, 73, I was working for the White House on ending the war in Vietnam. I was in charge of turning over everything America owned to the South Vietnamese government, and I was in charge of repatriating 27 American prisoners of war at Loc Ninh. Besides marrying my wife, that's the best thing I've done in my life.
I want to tell all three of you thank you for your service and welcome home, Colonel.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. It's an honor for us to have been here today and testify. And I hope we've been convincing. There's only one other state that has done what we're asking. That's Kansas. They have a highway for every war, starting with Civil War. I don't know how they did it, but they did it in 2008, and it's a long bill. But I think, as Representative Huffman encouraged me to do at last Memorial Day, he said, well, can't you just put it all in one bill? So here we are, and we're delighted that the American Legion VFW would like to testify behind us. Thank you very much for the
thank
time.
Thank you today. Very much, and thank you for your service, all of you.
Thank you.
So we'll call up the next panel. And also, I just wanted to let the committee know that ODOT is here in the form of Mr. Paul Nader. And if you have any questions about ODOT, and I don't know Paul, so.
Paul's on the back row.
He's back in the back. Oh, okay, thank you. So we have Keegan Hodges? And Dennis Guthrie. And you can choose who goes first, and you just have to
And Madam Chair,
yourself.
For yes. time management, how are we doing?
We're good.
I will be very quick.
We have one more bill after this, quick and then that's it. But please.
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Keegan Hodges. I'm representing the American Legion, and I have a letter I'd like to read from our commander and a resolution we passed. The American Legion Department of Oregon, at our Department Executive Committee meeting held January 12, 2015 in Milwaukee, Oregon, voted unanimously in support of Oregon House Bill 2036, designating the four highways honoring World War I, Korea, Purple Heart, Persian Gulf, Iraq, and Afghanistan veterans. The resolution, I wrote it for our department. Whereas House Bill 2036 designates four highways to honor World War I, Korea, Purple Heart, Persian Gulf, Iraq, Afghanistan veterans, and whereas the American Legion preamble to the Constitution states to preserve the memories and incidents of our associations in the Great Wars. And whereas the American Legion Department of Oregon is the largest wartime veterans organization in the state of Oregon, now therefore be it resolved at the American Legion Department Executive Committee meeting held in Milwaukee, Oregon, January 11th, 2015, support and recommend passage of Oregon House Bill 2036. And be it further resolved that the department commander and adjutant draft a letter in support of the House bill and forward to the Oregon legislature to be read into record showing our support. And be it further resolved that a copy of this resolution accompany the letter of support, and be it finally resolved that this resolution take effect on passage. The reason I wrote this resolution for the Department of Oregon is I, being a veteran myself, I travel the state post visiting our American Legion posts. I take my children with me. When I see a sign, it reminds me of, like the World War II, it reminds me of a story one of my uncles or one of the friends of the family growing up from World War II told me, or one of my uncles from Korea, my brothers from Vietnam. And I want to pass those on to future generations to see those signs and remember stories like maybe I'll tell my children or my brothers will tell my children. So thank you.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dennis Guthrie. I live in Redmond, Oregon. I'm a Vietnam veteran. I'm past state commander of the Veterans of Foreign Wars and several other past Surgeon General. Really, I haven't got a lot because you've heard of all the numbers. Mr. Tobiasen has covered quite well. But I think it is most important for our younger veterans on Highway 101. It took, I'm sure most of you were there last June 6th when we did the World War II Memorial. It took 70 years for us to finally get that done. So I think by doing it now, we'll show the younger generation that we really do appreciate what they have done for us in the last 10, 13 years of war that we've been going through. Obviously, the World War II veterans have already been out their highway, and the Vietnam veterans that I served in have been. It's only natural that we should, therefore, include the World War I's. And, of course, those who gave the sacrifice of their blood and party parts, the Purple Hearts. And, of course, the Korean War, which was known as the Forgotten War, we definitely don't want to forget them. So we, as the VFW, would like to thank you for your help in getting this bill. We are completely behind it, and we didn't do a resolution quite as eloquent as American Legion, but I can assure you that the Veterans of Foreign Wars and the Ladies Auxiliary is completely behind this. And thank you for your time.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions of the witness?
No questions, but I just wanted to thank you. He came back too soon. To thank everybody who's come today to support this package of bills that's really one bill. And I think that's a great idea to do it that way. You'll find this a very friendly committee, and I can't think of much that we'd turn down, put it that way. But I was going to say, when I drive the highways and I see those signs, I'm old, so I have people, you know, my family members who were in World War II, and I bought my house from a World War I vet, so still have the great coat. And the guys in my district who have given their lives in service to their country and for our freedom. And I thank you, too. Young guys, you do look like little kids to me. Sorry. But thank you for your service. So thank you for indulging me.
Certainly. Thank you very much for taking the time. So that completes.
I'd like to say one thing.
Oh, certainly. Go ahead.
Before everyone leaves, I'd like to let everyone know that we're doing a replica of the Vietnam Wall permanently in Jackson County.
Right now we're getting permission from the city of Central Point to put it next to the War Memorial in Central Point, which Bob has been there before. Our Congressional Medal of Honor recipient has been there as well. If you want to learn more about it, go to Southern Oregon Veterans Benefits. It's a 501c3.com. And go back and see that 501c3, and you can see what we're progressing on this. But it's an 80% replica of the Vietnam Wall, and it's also engraved by Vietnam veteran Marines. They do all the engraving on it, and it all has a total of 58,470 names on that wall. So, good project.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Huffman.
Just quickly, so the audience will know, do you have any idea yet what the plan is as far as a work session and when we might be moving the bill?
So, at this point, we have a tentatively scheduled for next Tuesday, Tuesday of next week.
Okay. Right. Thank you.
And I want to add my thanks to all of you here. I apologize for my having to go testify on another bill. I would prefer to have been here to listen to it, but I appreciate all that you've done, and Representative Huffman, for bringing this forward. And we look forward to moving this forward. But thank you very much. Okay. So next up in the public hearing is...
There he is. Right on
there
cue.
He is.
Right on cue.
House Bill 2645, and would you provide us some overview?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 2645 requires community colleges and public universities to consult with Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs to establish priority enrollment for qualified first-time veterans or active service members. It requires ODVA certification. There is no revenue impact. There may be a fiscal impact. No statement is yet issued. There is a subsequent referral to the Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development Committee, and there is a possible amendment for your consideration.
Thank you. So, Representative Witt, would you like to come and introduce this?
Mr. Chairman, with your indulgence, I'd like to bring up the genesis of the bill.
You bet.
And also, with your permission, anticipating some amendments coming to this bill, I would like to discuss what I suspect will be the amended bill and the bill that actually is considered.
Sure, that would be very appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm State Representative Brad Witt from Oregon's House District 31, appearing before you this afternoon in support of House Bill 2645. With me today is Jaime Rodriguez, who is largely responsible for coming up with with this bill. This bill establishes a priority enrollment system in our state's community colleges and public universities for active military personnel as well as qualified veterans. And some possible examples of that, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, might be, or what it might look like, would be a veterans registration day, perhaps, in advance of a college's normal registration day, where there are exceedingly long lines with many, many people and folks having to wait, at least in my experience of a number of years ago, many, many hours in line. It could be, and none of this is mandated. These are only possible examples. The bill doesn't mandate anything outside of the priority enrollment system. It leaves that up to the college or university. But these are some possibilities, just for your consideration. Perhaps an early chance to enroll for a seminar that would typically be a small enrollment, perhaps 20 people at most, which may be particularly difficult to get into otherwise. It might be priority enrollment in a high-demand course that would be necessary for graduation requirements. or it could even be perhaps a pick of the litter, a time segment that might allow the individual the opportunity to go to school and maintain that full-time job and the family obligations that that many veterans and active military personnel have. All of these items, all of these possibilities, all of these examples, I think lend themselves as assistance to the veterans and active military community who might find it difficult otherwise to participate in their normal life and obtain additional education. And quite frankly, for a number of people who are very likely to face a number of challenges. And I don't want to paint the veterans community with a broad brush. That would be a horrible mistake. But there are many, many, many veterans that are returning, particularly from our most recent couple of wars, who suffer a very high rate of PTSD. And the mere fact that they would have to be in very long lines for a number of hours with lots of people probably isn't conducive to helping them come back into the education community, particularly when they may not either feel or view themselves as similar to a lot of the other student body population. They may be older, they may have a lot of different experiences, and on and on and on. This bill comes forward as an effort to help overcome those kinds of challenges and hurdles, and truly, Mr. Chairman, all of the credit for bringing this bill forward goes to Jaime Rodriguez, who is not only one of my constituents, but is a champion of Portland Community College in general, the Rock Creek campus in particular, and probably no bigger friend of veterans anywhere. Mr. Rodriguez, Mr. Chairman, if you would allow.
You bet. Mr. Rodriguez.
Thank you, Representative Witt. I think you gave me too much credit. Jaime Rodriguez, thank you, committee, for allowing us to bring this this bill forward. I merely was the ball carrier. I want to say that a little bit about myself is that I am a peacetime veteran, having served in the 1980s in the U.S. Army and the California Army National Guard before coming up here to Oregon, where I've been here for about 25 years now and currently has been a resident of Washington County for about 15 years. And I want to speak on the frustrations that veteran students have. I served at the PCC, Portland Community College's Rock Creek campus from August 2013 to June 2014. It was a part-time job, but I probably was there closer to 40 hours a week. There's a lot of things going on there. Rock Creek does attract a lot of veterans because of their technical fields in diesel repair, auto collision, the aviation department, and welding. So as I was there, I was the coordinator for the Veterans Resource Center. The Veterans Resource Center had typically about 100 visitors. We service about 100 vets, student vets a month. On a top month, we probably did 400. Some of the frustrations, that the number one frustration in a survey that we pulled out in the fall term of 2013 was priority registrations. One of the things that happens to a veteran who has earned his benefits through the VA is that he needs to get certified, his schedule of classes, and then he can go over and get registered. Well, during that certification by the VA certifier, and getting in line to register, things may have changed. When he gets to the line, he actually does start registering. Class schedules may have changed. Unlike a normal student who can start choosing options, a veteran student needs to go back to the VA certifier and see what's available. Bouncing them back again to the VA line, and it's like a ping pong. Our soldiers have served us well. They've trained us well. They've serviced us well. And they come back here only wanting to better themselves from going from an Army way of life to a civilian life and getting trained. It builds on the frustration of a student vet who's earned his benefits, but it makes it even worse having the fact that they have to go through a peacetime frustration that you know, in all senses, it's an easy fix. I believe that there'll be little cost, if any, for colleges. I do know that there are two colleges currently in the state of Oregon, both in the South, Southern Oregon University and Rogue Community College, who do offer priority registration for veterans. And again, if Oregon, in a sense, and in the past, the Oregon legislature has been a vet-friendly state. They've passed legislation for the benefit and the favorably for veterans. And I think this bill will also continue that. In 2013, the Department of Defense released a report that 10,000 veterans will be 10,000 service members would be being released or retiring from the service branches combined. 10,000 a month, that's nationally for the next dozen years or so. I think if Oregon wants to compete and continue to have its residents compete competitively in the workforce, we need to be able to allow veterans who bring already a worth of experience, allow them more favorably registrations that they don't allow the frustration. And Mr. Representative Witt brings up a good point. Not all veterans in the broad sense, we can't paint them all in one big bucket, but a lot of them may not be ready. A lot of them need to be, transitioned back into civilian life. Some of them take 4 or 5 years, but unfortunately, some veteran benefits, you got a 10-year window to capitalize on that. For some of them, they may be 8 or 9 years before they're ready to come back and then go to college. And they shouldn't be stuck in a system that not allowing them to properly enroll in college. And I think with Mr. Witt, again, thank you. All I did was take the frustrations of our veteran students and brought it forward to a friendly representative who was also a friend of the veterans. And going forward, I want to say thank you.
Do you have questions of these witnesses? I would just like to say, where were you in 1971 when I came back?
Yeah.
What you're describing went on there to some extent. So I appreciate you bringing this forward. Yeah. Thank you very much. Representative Witt, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I'd like to say something.
Certainly, go
Chair,
ahead.
I couldn't agree more. You know, when you're a veteran, you're a veteran. It doesn't matter if you've been out 5 minutes or 5 years or 50 years, you're still a veteran. You still have, to me, you should have your benefits as long as you're around. And I don't understand how you can, you know, the way the system's set up, after 25 years, you lose this benefit. Well, why would I lose that benefit? I'm still a veteran. I've still served my time. I've still served my country. And I've still done my duty. So I guess I fail to fathom the thinking of our federal and state governments when they put time frames on veterans. As for PTSD, I think Representative Witt, that now we're recognizing it. I think every one of us came home with it that was in a combat zone, and we just suffered from different degrees of it. So thanks for bringing this forward.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, okay. Members of the committee, for this opportunity. And I do have some extra copies of what I anticipate will be the amendments that will be brought forward for the public here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you all.
Sir, thank you. Okay, so we have several that have signed up to testify, so I'll call. First, I'm just going to call the people that have indicated they've traveled the furthest. So Stephanie Corns and Catherine Gutierrez.
Just miss Mark the
ball. Oh. Yeah. That's all right. Come ahead and come up and testify.
She goes to Willamette.
Oh,
no.
Well, that could be.
Really.
Just across the street.
She walked across the street.
Yeah. Well, she walked, though.
No.
So we'll just do the team from PCC
okay.
Rock Creek.
So that would be great. Time. Just make sure you introduce yourself before you start your testimony. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Stephanie Cornis. I'm currently the coordinator over at Portland Community College Rock Creek. Mm-hmm. I've been there for about 3.5 years now. I was the assistant underneath Jaime, and now I'm the main coordinator. So in the time that I've been over there, I've seen a lot of times where students just end up dropping out of school because they can't get into the classes that they need in order to facilitate a work schedule or to facilitate their family schedule. Oftentimes when families come back, it's not only just the veteran that's going to school, it's also his wife. And oftentimes they have children. And so trying to accommodate both of those schedules in order to make ends meet is pretty difficult. Veteran students have right now 15 years to use their benefits. It's estimated by the American Council of Education that it takes veterans 7 years to actually graduate. And ultimately, out of all of those using benefits right now, it's estimated that only 14% actually graduate. So that number is pretty staggering when you think about the fact that there's almost 900,000 people on benefits right now. So I'm going to go over a few things that I see day after day. The housing allowance does not provide financial stability like it was meant to do. In 2010, they took that and they said, okay, we're actually going to prorate it so that you are only getting paid for the days that you're in school. So 1 month, we'll get $1,620, and the next month, I'm going to get $564. It's unrealistic to think that a student is going to go out and find a job for 2.5 weeks full-time to supplement that income. So they are forced to work at least part-time and most full-time in order to maintain their bills, their housing, and any other payments they came out of the military with. They came out with adult financial obligations. We're not living at home. We have car payments. We have credit card payments. We have bills that we have to make. Oftentimes, if they don't meet the VA criteria for free health care, then they're paying for copays for medications. If they're still in the process of doing all of their benefit as far as their disability and compensation, then they're paying the copays up until the time that's approved, which oftentimes can take 14 months to 2 years, depending on whether or not you have to do an appeal. So trying to juggle school, work, sometimes a family, and then on top of that, any VA doctor appointments that they have to make is pretty much impossible. I can tell you I'm a full-time parent. I go to school full-time. I work part-time, and I have a 70% disability rating. I maintain a B average, but I was just put on high blood pressure medication because of the stress in my life. So that's just to give you an idea. You just don't know the background of where they're coming from and what they're going through at that time. Now, PCC has done a lot in order to help make veterans successful. Over the past few years, they put the Veterans Resource Centers in place so that if they are having problems, there's always a place to refer them to, and we can look it up and connect them with a specialist out in the community, or we can fix the problem for them if it's internally. On top of that, they've put in VA classes that now first-term students are required to take. This really helps foster student success because they're aware of what their benefits are from the beginning, what benefits they haven't gone through in order to get compensated or get in place. They're aware of common problems that come up term to term when their payments may be late, fall term. You're not gonna see your payment oftentimes till the beginning of November. Because the VA is so backed up, if you're one of the last people certifying and one of the last people coming in, you're at the very back, and the VA is 30 days out from actually processing your payment, and then it's going to take 2 weeks for the Treasury to pay that out. So in the meantime, we're juggling getting them emergency loans to pay for books, trying to help them get loans from out in the community and hook them up with various resources in order to pay their bills and get everything set up. If we have a student that it's the prior year, we're able to kind of hit some of that stuff off at the head and be like, okay, this is what we need to do because this is what's going to happen in between summer and fall. Now, if this is a first-term student that's just come out of active duty, I didn't have time to do that, so now I'm in emergency mode and trying to fix all of these issues. But the student wasn't aware of that because that's not what they were told at their debrief when they got out. What they hand you, when they hand you your DD-214 and what actually happens from the time that they tell you this stuff is gonna happen is not the same thing, completely different. The second thing that they've done is after these two-hour classes that they're put through, they're actually mandated to do a three-term plan with an advisor. I'm trained in advising up in the center where I am. We also have a veteran advisor that only deals with veteran students, and she's up in the orientation center. And the reason why is because we're very familiar with the benefits. We are least likely to screw anything up and screw up their payments. On top of that, it's the honest truth. There's too many loopholes and rules, once you think you know it, something changes, and you don't know unless you're on the email list, and it just is what it is. The second thing that happens is they also have access to advisors and closed programs. So that doesn't usually happen. Usually if it's a closed program, until you're admitted, an advisor won't even meet with you. What they've done now is said, okay, you know what, veteran students, because they're planning on coming in, we're going to hit them off at the head, and we're going to say, okay, this is what you need to do to be successfully accepted to this program. And those advisors are actually doing that on their own time. So it goes to show how much they actually care. Now, once I put together that three-term plan for them, they don't have priority enrollment. So I could have told them, okay, these are the classes that you need to take. These are the teachers that I recommend. And those classes are going to be filled. And there's not going to be anything that they can do about it. It may not fit their schedule. So then they have to make another appointment advising. This is a waste of time and money and resources. We've already done this. They should be able to just go in with that plan that we've set out for them, that we've mandated them to have, and have them be able to enroll in it. That doesn't always happen. Another thing that is a huge problem is teachers. Not every teacher is built to deal with a VA student. Not every teacher has a learning style that is conducive to a VA student. That's not their fault. They're entitled to teach any way that they choose to do. But there are certain teachers that we know that veteran students are going to be least likely to be anxious in their classes. They're going to do better because the syllabuses are outlined very exactly that this is what needs to happen here, here, and here. I'll have students stay up half the night finishing a paper, and they come in the next day, and the teacher's like, well, most of you don't have it done, so we'll just go ahead and we'll wait till next week. Oh my God. This throws them into the biggest hissy fit I've ever seen. And I'm like, this is not, it's fine. Life is going to go on. And they're like, no. And you know, we have PTSD freak out, and I'm calming them down, de-escalating. I'm like, pet the puppy, relax. There are other teachers that I know, this is due on this date. This is how they teach math. They're very to the point, okay, you're not understanding this, let me take a little bit of extra time with you. No problem. There are other teachers that I know, if you don't take the little tabs off the side of the paper, they're going to fail them. It's craziness. So I go and I put them into these classes where I know they're going to be successful, and I tell them, try to get this teacher, and they can't. And then they get put in with this other teacher, and it's a disastrous term. Everything's all over the place for them. They're already on a level of stress that's up here at borderline of what a person can handle, and you just send them over the edge when everything could have been easily prevented. And I like to use the sticker story, as I call it, as the mindset of how veterans think. In the military, a plane can crash over a sticker, and that seems stupid, but it happens. You have someone in the Air Force who is a lone PFC, private, E1, E2, and they mislabel a battery. So the battery is then put into the airplane the wrong way. It's not tied down correctly because it doesn't have the right sticker, not the right marking. During the flight, the package tips over. The battery acid leaks through the bottom of the plane and eats away the wires, and the plane crashes. All over a sticker. And so when you think about a veteran, that is how their minds think. They're like, what about the sticker? Well, I'm taking leaders and I'm trying to de-escalate them back to students. They're trying to take students and make them leaders. They're two different things. And so that just kind of gives you a perspective of what I'm looking at from day to day. I don't know if that helps or not. But I'll turn it over to Steve. He's our VSOC coordinator over at Rock Creek.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for this opportunity to testify.
You want to move the microphone just a little closer?
My name is Stephen Gordon. I'm the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs Vet Success on Campus Counselor at Portland Community College. I'm a certified Veterans Rehabilitation Counselor, an Oregon certified licensed professional counselor, and I've been working for the Department of Veterans Affairs as a vocational rehabilitation counselor for over 16 years. Currently, there are about 1,200 veterans receiving VA education benefits at PCC. Passage of legislation enacting priority enrollment for students receiving VA education and vocational rehabilitation benefits will ensure that qualified veterans and students serving the armed forces, National Guard, and reserves, and their eligible dependents will be able to take full advantage of the federal education benefits they've earned through their military service. Our veterans deserve the opportunity to get the most from their education benefits so they can fulfill their academic goals and successfully transition to new careers in civilian life. This bill supports these endeavors. Education benefits under the post-9/11 GI Bill are limited to 36 months. In addition, veterans have limited time before their GI Bill or other education and vocational rehabilitation benefits expire. After taking the college placement exam, many veterans are required to take developmental or remedial courses. Thus, months of education benefits can be used before they're able to take prerequisites for their major, such as college-level mathematics and writing courses. Furthermore, if a student veteran is unable to enroll in the necessary required courses each term, he or she becomes even more likely to use the entire education benefit entitlement prior to graduating. Many veterans depend on the GI Bill housing stipend to subsidize living expenses so they can focus on their educational pursuits. As the housing stipend is based on enrollment status, if a student veteran is unable to enroll in only one needed class, his status could change to three-quarter time, which reduces the housing stipend by 25%. This can create an undue financial burden, especially for the veteran with a family. Without priority registration, they may be forced to pay out of pocket for tuition, fees, textbooks, and supplies in order to complete their training programs. Veterans who are already working and supporting families face additional challenges that negatively impact their chances for success. Added financial burden and debt may cause some veterans to abandon their education due to other competing responsibilities. Priority enrollment, also called priority registration, is a needed resource. With priority enrollment, student veterans will be assured of being able to enroll in required courses on time, stay on track for graduation, and maximize their VA education benefits. States with laws enacted already for priority registration include Washington, California, Wisconsin, Illinois, Ohio, Florida, Pennsylvania, West Virginia, and Tennessee. Thank you very much.
Good. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Michael DeWitt. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, audience, it's my pleasure to be here today. It's an honor to get to be here and testify before you. So, as Stephanie and Steve mentioned, PCC has already taken steps towards this. Actually, as it stands right now, it will be implemented for summer term this year. And right now it's only going to affect those veterans utilizing benefits, not those that are paying out of pocket. So it's the biggest thing being, as Steve mentioned, you have X amount of time. You have classes that are required for your program, and the only classes that the VA will certify are those that apply towards your degree, towards your major. As a veteran in a community college system, you can only have two declared majors at any one given time. As a general populace student, you can declare as many majors as you want. So this affects us in the sense that we can only declare up to two majors to try and get these classes certified and paid for by the VA so that we can maintain full-time status, so that we can get our full-time benefit for our BAH to maximize our ability to be able to pay our bills and take care of our car payments and our credit card payments and buy food, pay the rent, while we're maintaining full-time student status. And sometimes these classes, if you're especially as a new student coming in, I can speak from my personal experience. I started attending PCC in 2011, fall term, and I came in, and one of the classes I needed, it's a pretty basic class, almost all of the degrees at the college require this class, Writing 121. I signed up for Writing 121. I was on a wait list. I just had 20 people on it. I was number two. I came into the class the first day because they encourage you to come in for the first week to see if anyone gets dropped. One person dropped out, so now I was number one on the wait list, but I was still not in the class. These classes are held twice a week, usually, for 2 hours a day. So I come in for the second day of the first week, and one of the students didn't show up for the first week. The instructor dropped him from the class. Now I'm in the class. I was the only one to make it off the wait list. I was very lucky because it was a class I needed. If I wouldn't have made this class, I would have had to turn around and scramble like a chicken with my head cut off to find a class to fill my schedule, to add 4 additional credits so that I could maintain a full-time status and not have my BAH reduced, so that I could afford to live while I go to school full-time. So PCC is already taking these steps, and it's being implemented summer term. The bill here would just ensure that the rest of the colleges in the state of Oregon follow suit. Reading the bill, it seems to be worded more in general towards veterans as a whole, but our biggest concern at PCC has been those utilizing benefits, because those are the ones that affects the most. Now, as Representative Esquivel, am I pronouncing that right? As he noted, why, as veterans, do we have these limitations on when we can use our benefits? It used to be 10 years you had to utilize from date of discharge your GI Bill benefits or lose them. Now it's gone up to 15 years. But why? Why is that? Well, I feel like that's a matter you have to take up with the VA, and unfortunately, that's well above our heads. So this is, in my opinion, the first step towards enacting that kind of change that we would like to see. In this case, the way that this bill, the way that PCC is implementing for those students utilizing benefits, it's no cost, no additional cost to the colleges for them to do this, to enact priority registration. The way that PCC is going about it, they are not going to have a veterans priority registration group. Instead, they are going to open up all veterans to group one registration. So they will be in the very first group to open for registering for classes. This gives them an advantage over all those new students coming in who are in, I think there's somewhere around 9 groups, and all the new students coming in are usually group 9, like bottom of the barrel, when everyone else has got to pick and choose their classes and take away all these class slots for the classes, basic courses that are needed, like writing 121, math 60, math 90, math 95, math 111, courses of that nature. I feel that PCC's taken the right stance on this, and as a member of the Veterans Resource Center, I actually work there on work study. I work for Stephanie, kind of gotten a chance to work as her right hand. She's teaching me all the ins and outs of this, and it's thus far been a very interesting experience, to say the least. PCC community member and a veteran student and a work study there helping advocate for these veterans' benefits and helping assist other veterans in utilizing their benefits, I feel that PCC is definitely headed in the right direction. This is going to be a very beneficial thing and create a lot of de-escalation and in the frustration that our veteran community students are experiencing currently with the way the system currently is. And I feel that enacting this into state law would be an excellent idea, because the way that the systems are currently set up, a lot of colleges in general, as a community college member, I can only enter a 2-year degree in general. PCC only grants 2-year degrees. So if I want to move on to my bachelor's and further utilize my education benefits, now I'm going to transfer to, say, PSU. PSU puts me in the bottom priority registration, regardless of the amount of credits I have, because I don't have credits from their institution. So even though I may have 112 credits, 0 of those were earned at the PSU's institution. So now I'm in the bottom priority registration again, and I'm facing the same issue that I faced when I first started attending PCC. with the enactment of this bill, this would allow me to transfer to go into a four-year degree and still have priority registration so that I can stay on track for my degree program, that the VA will only certify classes that relate to that program and get the max use out of my benefits. And as Stephanie mentioned, a lot of these veterans coming out are taking up to 7 years to adjust to civilian life before they even decide to go back to school, further their education, so they can get a well-paying job and be active members of society. And that's, you're already halfway to losing your benefits without, you know, halfway to not having them at all to utilize. So having this in Oregon law definitely be very beneficial. Even to those who lose their benefits, who wait too long or didn't realize, or it takes them a long time to figure out what they want to do, at least they would have the opportunity to come in and put the time in and get out, so to speak. Thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Do any members have questions of this panel? Representative Escobar?
Yeah, I don't really have a question. I just wanted to solidify what she said about the rent. I mean, that's beyond anyone's comprehension. You think IQs must have just dropped in the system. But to relate to that, I can relate to it because I'm a number two diabetic from Agent Orange in Vietnam. And so I said, well, at least you can do is give me my test strips. And they said, yeah, we'll give you your test strips, but you're not going to like it. And I said, why? Well, you're a number two diabetic, so out of a 90-day supply, we're only going to give you 45 days. Because you should only check it every other day since you're number two diabetic. That's the mentality that you deal with. So,
thank you. Thank you all for coming. Your button is—that's good.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks.
So next we have Catherine Gutierrez. Do you want to speak? And then John Wyckoff and Jock Mills.
Hi, my name is Catherine Gutierrez. I'm also part of the PCC group. I'm work, study, and I work under Stephanie. I don't really have much to say. I think that priority registration is very important. I haven't dealt with some of the headaches that Stephanie and Michael have dealt with. I've only been here 3 terms, so I'm about to start panicking pretty soon when I try to get into my degree program. I do know that I am a class 9, as they said, so I'm also a mother, so I only have certain times that my daughter's daycare is open. So I get up at 7 o'clock in the morning as soon as registration opens up for me so that I can pick the classes that I need and still be able to work in a certain time frame from 8 to 4 o'clock. Right now I'm taking 3 classes Monday through Wednesday from 9 to 3:50 and still try to make part-time work. And then Tuesdays and Thursdays I take a class and then work as much, because the VA only allows you to work 25 hours for the week. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. There they are. Welcome. Introduce yourself for the record, please.
For the record, John Wyckoff, Legislative Director for the Oregon Community College Association. We represent Oregon's 17 community colleges. And I would like to thank Representative Witt for bringing this concept forward, which we support, and for working with us on where we did have a few areas of concern that I just want to share with you. Overall, we want to do everything we can to make this work and to provide a good experience for registration and priority for veterans. Where we do have a bit of an issue is we have some of our smallest colleges, they don't have priority registration at all, and in that case would have to create a system they don't currently have, for which there would be a fiscal impact. These again tend to be our smallest colleges, and part of the reason for it, we've done a survey, and I haven't got back from all of them yet, but an example would be Clatsop Community College, where they don't have priority registration because they don't tend to have waiting lists, and it just hasn't been an issue. And that, for some of the smaller colleges, is why they don't. Priority registration tends to be for seniors who are close to graduation, and you want to make sure they get that course and don't have to wait another year if you have a course that's perhaps only offered one time a year. So that's sort of why especially the larger schools have priority registration. At some of the smaller ones, this just hasn't become an issue, and so they would have to create a system they don't have. For the larger ones that have it, allowing veterans into it is not a problem, and it's something we want to, and we're happy to work to do, but want to work to make sure that, for again, for some of these smaller schools that don't have it, that there wouldn't be a significant fiscal burden to creating a program they don't have because they haven't yet found a need for it based on waiting lists. And I think that really concludes my comments. We want to do everything we can to help on this and make it work for veterans.
Thank you very much, John. Good afternoon. I'm Jock Mills. I'm the Director of Government Relations for Oregon State University, and I'm here actually representing all seven public universities. We're operating under a different system.
That's right.
There should be some heads nodding behind me as I go through this, so I'm representing all of us. And I can talk specifically for OSU. We've got about vets registered at in classes enrolled at OSU, and totally supportive of the intent of the bill. The standards that the bill establishes are quite reasonable. We can work with those. The amendments, we've taken a look at them. We understand what the amendments are doing. They simplify the qualification process, so that's all good, so that there's not a whole bunch of kind of confusing things. So far of what we see in the bill, everything seems workable. And I want to indicate that we're looking at trying to avoid kinks in the process. This reminds me of a conversation I had with a consumer person when I was a consumer, and the person on the other end of the line couldn't quite get what I wanted, and the explanation was it was all done by computer. Mm-hmm. And so this is all done by computer. And so part of this is making sure that our process works in a way that students line up in the best way that they can. There aren't lines. There's actually people waiting to log on, and then they register, and that's how that works. So we do definitely have a priority system. It is obviously weighted toward those students with more credit so that we can ensure they get graduation, and veterans clearly benefit from that, so they come in. I also want to indicate that the way I believe the system works is if you're coming into OSU and you've been part of a dual partnership program where you're duly enrolled at a community college and you come into OSU, those credits are going to help you in terms of putting you further in front of the line as you go through it. So it's not like that. You're starting from square zero when you come into OSU as a transfer student from a community college. We have agreements with all 17 of the institutions. So I think there may be some issues in terms of making sure that the students who are registering for the first time as veterans are getting all of the academic counseling they need so that they're registering for the classes they want. And that is an issue that may actually move them further back in line because we're making sure they're getting the services they need before they register. It's not as a matter of trying to slow them down. It's just making sure that when they enter the classes, those are, in fact, the ones they want and the ones that they're going to be able to succeed in. So the intent is purely to qualify. It's to meet the law. We just want to make sure there aren't straight, bold, black lines that catch us when we're actually trying to do the right thing. And with that, we're fully supportive of this effort.
Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And for the record, UO and PSU were back there. I read their lips, and they're like, who is this guy identifying? I'm kidding.
That's right.
Okay, so a question. This is probably more at the university system than community college. So John brought up a senior. So under the current bill with the proposed amendments, how would, and maybe Representative Witt would have been the better one to ask on this, but how would it work if you had a veteran that was maybe a junior that still had a little time to get the degree completion versus a senior that still had to get this one class because they had gotten bumped as a junior? It's the last thing. We don't want to kick them into a fifth or sixth year and add to their student debt. Who's going to get priority under that situation with this bill? Okay, so I can't answer your specific system or question about how will OSU arrange its priority system. I can tell you how we read the bill. And the bill standard is that the only thing we need to do to satisfy the bill is ensure that a veteran is not behind a student who's registering for the first time. It's a minimum standard. So when we have a student who's registering for a first time, the veteran is going to be in front of that person. And that's the only person the bill mandates us to create a priority for. We may choose the way we design our priority setting system to do that differently. And in fact, if you have a veteran who has credits, that veteran will move further up than what this bill would enable that veteran to be in the first place. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Other questions in this group?
If I may, just add very quickly. As we are community colleges, I think when I said senior, I meant sophomore, because we only really do 2 years. And for us, too, I wanted to add one thing that we, I think that's how it would work. And I can't, because we will have slight variations within probably each campus. But I think we read it similarly, where it puts them into that group that in some cases, LB, for example, is already doing a form of priority registration for veterans. Often it's used for students with disabilities, which obviously captures a fair number of veterans. And so that's another area. It's not just students who are getting close to finishing their degree or certificate. It's also often students with disabilities. And so this would put veterans into that priority group. And in our case, for campuses that have that.
Sure.
OSU, we have a disability priority as well.
Sure. Thank you very much for taking the time to come testify. Jason Seifert.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jason Sifford. I go to Portland Community College in Sylvania. I recently moved here from Montana to Oregon because my fiance said it was the greatest state ever, and she has completely set me to that spot. This is the greatest state I've been to as a United States veteran and as a military brat, because my whole family was military as well. I have went through multiple colleges, and I haven't had the experience that I have yet as far as this bill is concerned. I'm getting closer to a degree, and I need to get the classes that I am needing, or the GI Bill will not pay for it. So if it doesn't fall into the category, then it won't work. I've used up many credits on the GI Bill. I have went to going through different types of medical facilities at the cost of brain cancer. And now I just want my degree so I can finish up and go on with my life. When it comes to a part to where I can't find a class to go to due to the fact that it's completely full, and I can't qualify for any other classes because all my electives have been taken. So this bill is very great for veterans to be able to pay for their school and go through having the BAH to support them for the rent, food, and all other possibilities. And that's pretty much all I had to say on that one.
Great. Thank you, Jason, for taking the time to come and testify. So, Laurie Skillman and Molly.
I'm Molly. I'll take her if you want me to. She usually doesn't have another dog to be distracted.
Is there another dog in here?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Good afternoon, Chair Lively, Vice Chair Boone, Vice Chair Escavel, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Laurie Skillman. I'm the Senior Policy Advisor for the Oregon Department of Veterans Affairs. And I worked with Representative Witt on this bill and just suggested some amendments, and he's graciously going to put those through. I just wanted to let you know that the amendments, there were a couple of things that people talked about, sort of, and one of them was limiting the priority enrollment to certain veterans. If you look at a certain section of the bill, what it had the unintended consequence of just allowing only veterans who are on the GI Bill. It kind of made that inference that only veterans who are getting GI Bill benefits would be eligible for priority enrollments. So deleting that section will open it up to all veterans. And deleting another section that really gave the priority enrollment to post 9/11 veterans and kind of cut out the Gulf War veterans is also going to be helpful. And then the other kinds of amendments there's nothing that's added. It's just language that's taken out. We'll really simplify the bill for ODVA, for the community colleges, and for the university. So thank you.
Thank you, Lori. Any further questions by members of the committee? Okay. Any other business to come before the committee? Okay. We're adjourned. See you all Tuesday. We're adjourned. See you all Tuesday. Okay.